So when I was 19, Sonam already finished his Tibetan high school and went to Banaras Hindu University, very, very respected Indian university. And Sonam was at that time studying continually BSc physics.
Yeah, so physics. And then I was planning to join electrical engineering, next phase.
And then at Sonam's university, there was a major student strike that really interrupted Sonam's education there. In the process, actually, Sonam entered at the Sajjo College, and that must be 73. So Sajjo College was Sajjo College is one of those college, monastic college, that was actually Sajjo College. The idea of college in for Tibetan Buddhist traditions in Tibetan community, Sajjo College was the first one, and established in 1972, maybe in December, during Sakya Pandita's anniversary. And so Sonam joined Sajjo College, and at that time there must be about 9 or 10 students, very few, 10 or 9, not more than 13 monks. And then that that 73 winter, the place name is called Mussoorie. It's the same as what you have, Missouri somewhere. Must be a British name. But anyhow, we call it Mussoorie. And Mussoorie was British India summer, resort area. And so Sajjo College was established there. And then Sonam came to Mongod, where our family members are there. And I was about 19, and I was not, I was hoping to go somewhere for further education. So I'm sharing this how I also feel very, very fortunate that I was actually inspired and guided by Sonam, and Sonam helped me to get admission at Sajjo College. And we sent an application, but haven't received the result. It's a very, very difficult, like they enter only 2 or 3 students at a time. And so we didn't receive any response from the principal, Khenpo Abe Rinpoche. And so we decided that we just go. And we took train and got there after 4 days, and not knowing what is going to happen, we hope that we will get in. And then I got there and met Khenpo Abe Rinpoche, and I don't recall that I received the actual formal admission, but after a few days or 1 week, then I got confirmation that I was in. So since then, well, during that time, we were at the same time at Sakya College for 1 year?
Yeah, well, for 1.5 years, maybe.
1.5 years. Yeah. So I'm sharing this part of Sonam's education background in Dharma, in Buddhist philosophy and teachings. Sajjo College is a very, very highly designed for Buddhist academic and also Buddhist teaching and practices, but really train every monk as a teacher. after finishing. It's like a teacher training for 10 consecutive years without any responsibilities. Whereas Gelugpa may say they study 20 years, but 20 years has to do lots of responsibilities of becoming manager or cook or all of those. So psychology at the time, Kembabe Muchi managed to cut all other distractions and simply study for consecutive 10 years. But anyhow, we spend time together, and at that time we may have about 15, and Sonam usually do not share very much, but actually Sonam was one of the top of all 14 to 15, those first batch, and especially Sonam, I remember that Sonam got the highest actually test mark, mm-hmm. Especially on Madhyamik philosophy, and then after 1.5, then Sonam decided to continue his science physics, where he dropped and returned, and then Sonam finished his BSc, MSc in honors. I'm not sure you have that degree honor system, but anyhow, in British system, Indian, that's considered as a very highly respected. So BSc, MSc honors in particular subject.
I specialize in so-called particle physics, high energy physics. It's studying about the elementary particles, about the fundamental, the so-called fundamental constituents of matter. You know, usually we start from the most what you call bulk, most macroscopic system, down to the molecular system, then to the atomic system, and then to the nuclear system, and then what is inside the nucleus is the elementary particles. In those days, they are called protons and neutrons, but now we have quarks, right? We just go right inside the neutrons and protons also. So these days they have very different particles. I mean, unlike during my time, you know. Yeah. It's just so advanced. I mean, physics is such an advanced, it just advances with each new generation accelerator they built, the machines they built, you know, to see what's inside, what's inside the particles. You know. As the energy increases, they will find more particles. Yeah, that's like that.
And then Sonam continued his education, completing MPhil.
I did MPhil in theoretical nuclear physics at that time. It's just to write a dissertation, and then I just tried to offer my dissertation copy to His Holiness Dalai Lama also at that time, because he visited Punjab University at that time, yeah.
And so by that time, then Sonam is known as Science Pala. That means father of science. So Sonam holds the lineage of Tibetan scientists as a father of science. And so Sonam's generation, people don't call Sonam, they just call Science Pala. Pala is a father. Okay. And then Sonam continued his PhD in nuclear physics.
Yeah, in particle physics. Yeah.
And so meanwhile, while Sonam is learning these physics, Sonam also is highly interested and committed in Dharma practice. And Dharma studies, and sometimes I wonder that his Dharma interests actually might have interfered his science studies, because Sonam would be very, very busy in his research and science, and then Sonam is also highly interest involved in receiving teachings and doing studies. What I want to share with you is, Sonam asked me not to say too much to you. So. But I'm glad that you have noticed Sonam's knowledge and experience. I'm also very glad that you have not only recognized and also requested that Sonam give teaching not only our groups. I know that Sonam has been very, very helpful for many of us, especially if you participate Sonam's book study group. I also want to say not only his knowledge and experience in Dharma practice, actually Sonam is a hidden monk in addition to hidden yogi. Do you know that Sonam is a monk? Sonam is monk, but in the lay person's appearance. So sometimes we are very, very caught up the appearance. If you see a monk with a monk robe or a nun robe, then of course it's our common perception dilemma, and we may say, oh, this is a monk in this. But if someone is not wearing monk's robe, then of course we may not know. So anyhow, Sonam is definitely monk. I talked with him recently. Sonam has been actually monk for all his life, even when he was in Tibetan school in Mussoorie, throughout his teenage and through his college time and until now. So with that, so I'm very, very glad that Sonam accepted this. This is a great opportunity for all of us, including myself, receiving and learning from someone who truly has all the knowledge and experience, and not only knowledge and experience, but living life with this, which is very, very relevant to with this way of living and thinking. And so I think great example for how to be a Dharma practitioner, especially internally, very, very deep knowledge and practicing. So with that, so Sonam, we will request you to now give teaching for us, and it's all yours.
Okay. thank you very much for a very kind introduction to Geshe-la. Although I may never be as is described, but I simply feel very honored to be here today, because this is a special month. I mean, Buddha's birthday month. Mm-hmm. So we usually consider it to be very, very auspicious month, and then even to just maybe even to speak few words about Dharma is a very auspicious thing to do, because we say this is a month which increases our merit, you know, by millionfold for everything that you do virtuous, you know, any virtuous deed that you do will be increased millionfold, something like that, you know. So because of that, I just feel so happy and so honored to be here. And then as we have planned to do with Geshe-la, please, like Geshe-la describes, you know, I mean, I don't have that kind of experience and that kind of knowledge, but I'll try my best. I mean, and then the text that I plan to speak on is the 8 verses of mind training the mind, by Geshe Langri Thangpa. I think you all know about Geshe Langri Thangpa, who was one of the most famous Kadamba Geshe, you know. Kadamba teachings are teachings which came from the so-called Paladin Atisha, the great, you know, Indian saint Atisha. The Kadamba lineage started from him, you know, in Tibet in about 11th century, 12th century. And Geshe Langri Thangpa is one of the most famous disciple of disciple as well as great saint in this lineage. And now what I plan to do is, actually I thought I would be able to just compose a little note on my own about each verse, but I couldn't do it because I was so busy with one of my friends who came recently to meet me. So I just tried to Google and I found some very good commentary on the internet. And since since as I said, you know, it's always good to teach or listen to each other, and I thought this may be a very good time for me to just recite those verses, and then I'll just give the comments written by one. I don't know who wrote it, but I just found that commentary to be very precise and very precise as well as very relevant to our times, the times in which we live, you know. It describes everything very relevant to our time. So instead of just explaining from my own, you know, composition or construction of the meaning, the explanations, I will just read, I'll try to read this commentary. I don't know who did it. Because I find this is very relevant, and also this will save a lot of time because I don't have that much of experience in speaking, you know, and before an audience. So I thought I will read this, and then towards the end maybe I will be able to just, you know, clarify some of the meanings or in the form of question answer, if possible. So I'll just simply read and then see, you know, how it looks like. You all will see, you know, how relevant it is to the time in which we live, you know, to our daily life as well. So, 8 verses of training the mind. I mean, I asked Geshe about this and he says, feel free, whatever you want to, in whatever way you want to present it, you know, you can present it. So I'm taking that liberty, you know, this time. Okay. So I'll start first the brief introduction about this training itself. So this goes composed by the Buddhist master Langri Thangpa, who lived between 1054 to 1123. 8 verses for mind training, the 8 verses for training your mind is highly revered text from the Mahayana Lojong mind training tradition. These instructions offer essential practices for cultivating the awakening mind of compassion, wisdom, and love. The 8 verse Lojong enshrines the very heart of Dharma, revealing the true essence of the Mahayana path to liberation. Even a single line of this practice can be seen as encapsulating the entire teaching of the Buddha. For even a single statement of this mind training practice has the incredible power to help us subdue our self-oriented behavior and mental afflictions. The fundamental theme of mind training practice is the profound reorientation of our basic attitude, both toward our own self and toward our fellow human beings, as well as toward the events around us. The goal of mind training practice is the radical transformation of our thoughts, attitudes, and habits. Presently, we tend to cherish the welfare of our own self as the self at the expense of all others. However, the mind training teaching challenges us to reverse this process. This involves a deep understanding of others as true friends, and the recognition that our true enemy lies inside of ourselves, not outside. As we practice these Lojong teachings in daily life, we train the mind to embrace reality in a completely wholesome, wise, and compassionate way. These excellent practices help us purify our negativity and awaken the heart by giving us a way of to transform adversity, conflict, and hardship into a direct opportunity for spiritual growth. In this way, rather than perceiving difficult people or adverse circumstances in our lives as an obstacle, tragedy, or punishment, we now meet these experiences with deep compassion, wisdom, and skill, using them as our natural practice on the path to enlightenment. This is exactly what, I mean, the training teaches us. You know, in Tibetan, there's one small verse, Nyingmangawo dweva di changju lamdu gyur reins. So the most problematic times, circumstances we have the so-called tanyun and situ tawa, we have in our times the conflict of views, you know, tawa in Tibetan, and then of course the conflict due to all the different emotional problems, you know, the so-called negative emotions. So all the conflicts come either from conflicting views or from conflicting kaleshas or the so-called negative emotions. And then, of course, our living system, you know, our life, the kind of life or the lifestyle that people normally live in our world is also very kind of materialistic lifestyle, you know. So that too is a source of our conflict. And then, because of all those conflicts, then human beings on the whole is kind of a summation of, you know, all the kind of goal that we really try to establish in our life is just a summation. All these conflicts come together, you know, and then as a result, that's how the kind of problem we have in our life, in our times, you know. So this is the way it tries to sum up, you know, the kind of age in which the problems and the conflicts in the times and the ages in which we live in. So that's how this practice explains, you know. I'll still continue. By way of these treasured practices, we eliminate our competitive, selfish, and emotionally reactive nature, as well as our false and exaggerated concepts of self, and also self-grasping and self-cherishing. So these are the two main problems with humanity, you know, self-grasping and self-cherishing, which is the real source of all the conflicts and problems in our age, the so-called self-grasping and self self-cherishing. Yeah, these two problems. It is important to understand that the greed, jealousy, anger, pride, selfishness, and attachment, which cause us so much suffering, are actually misperceptions of reality, not inherent conditions of our mind. Therefore, these precious Lojong practices can purify our misperceptions and delusions completely, revealing the natural radiance, clarity, wisdom, and compassion of our true nature. So this is a brief introduction of the whole practice, you know. Now I'll go verse by verse and just describe each again, you know. So the first verse is, by thinking about all sentient beings as more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel for accomplishing the highest aim, I will always hold them dear. Now the Tibetan, I have the Tibetan, I'll simply read the Tibetan in Tibetan language first. dani simchen thamje la yishi nuru len ha pe tencho dube samba yi ta tu che bar simpra show. Okay, and now the commentary goes like this: cherishing and caring for others is the source of all happiness. Cherishing involves cherishing ourselves over others is the source of all suffering and negative conditions in this world. Therefore, our determination to attain enlightenment should always be motivated by our heartfelt desire to serve the welfare of all living beings. The attainment of enlightenment is the supreme goal. Our enlightenment comes from the cultivation of bodhicitta, the awakening mind of love, compassion, and wisdom. So this is because in Mahayana Buddhism, our goal is our highest goal is the attainment of Buddhahood, you know, the so-called the enlightened state. The enlightened state or the state of Buddha, Buddhahood. So for that to happen, you know, we have to cultivate. Love, compassion, and wisdom—the three most important ingredients or the components in order to attain the enlightened state. That is the cause and the condition. If we really want to eliminate all suffering, and attain true happiness, true state of happiness and well-being. The ultimate well-being. That is where we have to start with. You know, we have to start with love, compassion, and wisdom. All of three, almost like as the seed. You know. Okay. Bodhicitta arises from our deepest compassion. To develop this compassion and reach the supreme goal, we need others. In this way, all living beings are the principal source for our spiritual development and for accomplishing the supreme goal of enlightenment. In addition, at some time, each of us has been and will be a source of great kindness and benefit for one another. The immense kindness of all living beings is integral to our own human existence. Considering this, we can understand how living beings are even more precious than a wishful fling jewel, and that we should always cherish them and hold them dear. Okay, that's the first verse. Now the second verse is, whenever I am in the company of others, I will regard myself as the lowest among all, and from the depths of my heart cherish others as supreme. In Tibetan, Kangdu Sudan Robert said, Dangi Gwinle Mentashin, Shenla Samba Tabai, Chodo Jevar Zimbersho. Okay, and then the commentary goes, the verse calls us to train the mind in proper humility, eliminating our habitual arrogance and pride by thinking of ourselves as the lowest of all. This is certainly not suggesting we belittle ourselves. We should have self-esteem and self-confidence. Rather, a practice is being offered for taming our exaggerated sense of self-importance and for cultivating true humility and respect for others. The afflictions of arrogance, superiority, pride, and competitiveness create disharmony among people and prevent us from learning and evolving. Therefore, by respectfully holding others as supreme, we become more humble, gentle, and open. This naturally brings harmony and compassion into our relationships and helps us to achieve great qualities, virtues, and spiritual realizations. And then, the third verse is, in my every action, I will watch my mind, and the moment destructive emotions arise, I will confront them strongly and avert them, since they will hurt both me and others. In Tibetan, chulam kundu rang yu la tochin yu mong kema ta ta shen ma rung chepe na zentap dong en dobro shio. Okay, now the explanation and the commentary goes, this verse calls us for the sincere practice of mindfulness, closely examining our state of mind throughout all our actions. So our actions will be, in general, mental actions, physical actions, and verbal actions. So we try to group all our samsari actions into these three categories: mental, physical, and verbal. I mean, mind is of course all the ultimate source of our actions, but the mental actions are then actualized through our body and through our speech. So that's how we try to group all our actions. So through this practice of mindfulness, the teachings encourage us to firmly face and avert any disturbing emotions or negative attitudes the very moment they arise. The reason for this is that our delusions, disturbing emotions, and negative attitudes can provoke us to think, speak, or act in non-virtuous ways, which may cause harm to ourselves and others. This behavior brings karmic consequences and perpetuates our delusion and suffering. Therefore, throughout the day, while working, driving, walking, studying, talking with others, and so forth, we should closely examine our state of mind and heart. By training our mind in this skillful way, we will be able to firmly face and avert disturbing emotions and negative attitudes as they arise, and therefore they develop any further momentum or power. Now the fourth verse is, whenever I see ill-natured beings or those overwhelmed by heavy misdeeds and suffering, I will cherish them as something rare, as though I found a priceless treasure. And then the Tibetan verse is, Rangshin Enbe Simche Nam Digduk Thakwe Nunbe Nuntong Tse Rinshin Ter Tang Trepa Shin Nyebar Kawe Jinshin Shou. The commentary is, when we encounter unpleasant people or those overwhelmed by negativity, pain, or suffering, we often prefer to ignore or avoid them rather than cherish and care for them. We may consider ourselves to be more important or more evolved than such beings, and we usually turn from them, as we do not want to be bothered, hurt, or contaminated by their condition. This verse suggests that reversing our usual self-cherishing attitude by learning to cherish and care for such people, being joyful and grateful as if we had found a rare and precious treasure. To overcome the delusion and egoism of our self-cherishing, we view this encounter as an opportunity to serve and bring happiness to others, rather than a nuisance to be avoided. In this way, our self-cherishing mind diminishes and our compassion deepens, so as to embrace all living beings without exception. And now, the verse 5 is, whenever someone out of envy does me wrong by attacking or belittling me, I will take defeat upon myself and give the victory to others. Okay, now Geshe-la suggests that I take a short break, and then if people have questions, you know, they can ask.
I have a question.
Yes.
I've been wondering about this for a while. In some texts, like in the Grintara, I think it is. It says that we should seek to be befriend and keep company with like-minded Dharma friends,
mm-hmm.
and avoid those who are not. But this one
mm-hmm.
then is the opposite.
Yes. Yes.
Please help me.
Yes. Yes. So first, let's Sonam and then.
Yeah. So we'll have to discuss this. Slowly, you know, because this is very advanced text. I mean, advanced practice. Sorry, this Lojong practice. Yeah, but at one level, you know, when you say you just keep company with like-minded people, that is at one level. Because when you are not so developed, you know, spiritually, then you have to be careful, you know, because if you just keep company with people who are not like-minded or those who are. Those who have, you know, those who go against your kind of, you know, motivation, then you get interfered in your practice, Dharma practice, you know, and then you do not want to that happen, you know. But if you feel that you are really confident, you know, that no matter whatever circumstance you are in or company you are in, your spiritual development is intact, stable. You will not be disturbed. Then, of course, you can just, you know, mix with all kinds of company, and then should be able to help them, you know. So you are now more powerful in a spiritual sense. So therefore, you are not swayed, or you're not disturbed by the company of bad or what do you call those who are not aligned with your spiritual, you know, goals and development. So that is at one level, you know, yeah. So we have to understand where we stand in our path, in where we are on the path, you know, and depending on that, you know, I think depending on the level that we are in, we have to behave accordingly, you know, or select our company also accordingly. Yeah, that's what I feel, but, you know, still it's open, you know, please feel free to express and, yeah.
Variation off of your question,
mm-hmm.
then if you engage with people, and I notice they have the word cherish them,
mm-hmm.
but what is your responsibility with when you're with somebody who is, you know, is unaware of the fact that they're making themselves suffer? You know, and so what does actually cherishing them, does that mean then just loving them, or is there a responsibility to try to explain to them what helped you? You know, what line is, I mean, you know, how does that interact?
Please say, I could not
So if you're with, so, you know, if you do go and be with someone who,
right.
So, and you see them having the same mindsets that make them suffer a lot. And so let's say you're with that person.
Right.
So what does the cherishing them refer to? It's just meaning unconditionally loving them as they are, or is there some responsibility on your part to try to explain to them what set you free from that suffering, or point that out? I mean, you're just, you know, it's like, how does that?
How do you share it?
Yes. What's
so
appropriate?
Basically, yeah,
are you really? If someone hasn't asked or know it exists, they don't know it exists. They won't ask you for help. They're still believing that that's a real reality out there. Yeah. So what is, how would you say that?
How do we cherish that person?
Yeah. How do we, yeah, that's it. How do we cherish
that person? Yeah. So this is, again, this is a difficult question, of course. If I'm really enlightened, you know, I will be knowing exactly what to do immediately with that person. But if I'm not enlightened, then I have to just see, you know, in what the best way to deal with, you know. It's maybe sometimes it's better not to interact directly, you know, if that interaction doesn't help that person, you know. Or somehow, you know, you can indirectly help, you know, in whatever way we can, you know, because we can know the situation of the person from other people with whom he is interacting, you know. So indirectly, if we have a way of knowing, you know, how he lives or in what condition he is, and then if we know indirectly, you know, then we may be able to depending on our own capacity, we may be able to help him or her, you know. So there are so many levels. It's, yeah, this is a very complex situation. This is what I'm saying. This is very advanced advanced teaching, you know. I mean, of course, we should aspire, you know, to practice it slowly and slowly and slowly. But in the beginning, if I'm a novice practitioner myself, you know, I may not be able to help anything at all, you know. But still, in my mind, you know, I wish, you know, I could help. And I always pray. I really pray sincerely. So that in itself is kind of spiritual development in a sense, you know, slowly and slowly. Because we can never actualize the teachings right away. First, we have mental practice, you know, slowly and slowly. Then maybe we will be able to physically or actually help, you know, that person or whatever, you know, that object that we want to help. And then Geshe-la will explain more about it.
I'm not going to explain today.
Yeah, this is, I'm not saying, you know, the word cherish, you know, because as we say, you know, cherish in Tibetan means self-cherish is the opposite of cherishing others, you know. So this is what we call, you know, one pole and then this is the other pole, you know. It's a huge gap usually in our ordinary world, you know, because we, as we say, we are samsaric beings. But if you, as we keep on practicing and understanding and improve, you know, in our practice, maybe the gap, you know, slowly just becomes smaller and smaller, you know. That is the whole goal, you know, because ultimately then this self-cherishing completely dissolves, you know. There's no self-cherishing. Once we get enlightened, or even when we become arhats, you know, this self-cherishing is, completely annihilated, you know. So there's no self-cherishing, there's no clinging to the self. But that doesn't mean, you know, that I'm able to help simultaneously all sentient beings simultaneously and all their suffering is done away with. Even Buddha himself couldn't do that, you know, although he's enlightened, you know, during his time, he could only help few millions or maybe billions, but he could not liberate all sentient beings right away because he's enlightened, you know. So there are so many factors, you know, one has to actualize slowly and slowly.
So the word confront in the third verse, I'm interested in understanding what confront means in this context. We talked yesterday about emotional states, whether they be
right.
Our practice in relationship to those emotional states. And I'm just wondering if this language of confront means something a little different than what we were talking about yesterday when we were talking about emotional states, or it's similar. Maybe, Yamyan, here you have to...
Sentap. In Tibetan, sentap means just, you know, immediately, recall. Not immediately, but the moment it arises, you know, immediately.
Imagine.
Immediately?
Yeah, immediately. Sorry. This is the word, you know, immediately, you know.
Yeah, I have the sense of the immediacy, but when I think about confronting, I may have a different meaning. And part of what I think the word confront means to me is you're immediately aware of it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you explore it.
Right.
And you investigate it.
As
a kind of confrontation,
right.
Push it away necessarily,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to understand, that meaning of confront. It's not exactly rejecting, it's more like investigating. Does that make sense?
Mm.
And I'm thinking about it in light of our conversation yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Send up the cousin.
Send up don't have all shows.
Kanji
de dwa senda la ta kan du senda tu nam yu nga se da da sen bu du gole lam san chen da nyap nyap da ong ye she bra bra ko ko li ya chen ma ku che you don't bow to the kaleshas and negative emotions. That means you offer them immediately, you know, the moment they arise in your mind, you know, you will never give in to them, you know.
So
in other words,
since there's some sense of urgency, with sense of urgency, you overcome and take action right away. I think
yeah.
that they use the term confront, but really it's with the sense of urgency to
take action
right.
immediately.
Never yield to it, you know. Don't yield to kaleshas or afflictive emotions.
Yes.
That is what it means, you know. You just
yes.
really overpower them. Because otherwise they will overpower you if you don't, you know.
So I just have a comment. So I think that part of the answer to Pat's question is verse number 3. So the way that you cherish somebody,
mm-hmm.
if you're in the situation with somebody, if you're in the situation with somebody,
oh, okay.
the way you cherish them, the first step, right, is number 3. You're mindful of the arising of your destructive emotions.
In response to them.
That's how. That's the first way you cherish them, right? You'd be aware of your own emotion, your own response.
Exactly. You're raising your hand.
We'd have to go back to the previous one, but I thought maybe it just reminded me of kind of a story from my own life. So I guess I'll share that. Nobody minds. I had an uncle that I guess about 6 years ago he died of a heroin overdose,
mm-hmm.
and he was a heroin addict for like, I don't know, 10 years or something. And if you ever had a serious addict in your family, you know, it's difficult to deal with and it affects the whole family and stuff. So since Pat was asking about, you know, how do you cherish somebody, how do you know when to help them and stuff, you know, I remember with him, there was like, I don't know that anybody could have helped him, but what ended up happening is everybody was so upset about not being able to help him that they were miserable,
mm-hmm.
and he was already miserable regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of a situation where I think everybody kind of neglected to cherish him at all, and they just wanted to, like, change him and make sure that he wasn't an addict anymore. It didn't do any good. He died of heroin overdose, and, you know, nobody's attempts to change him ever helped. And I don't know that it would have helped had they taken a different approach, but it certainly would have helped them. And so my whole family would have been miserable for 10 years going, why are we not changing him? Why can't we change him, you know? And, you know, whatever kind of help they ended up offering or not offering, being able to, like, to see him in a different light would have made the entire situation different, you know, instead of, like, 10 years of, you know, being angry at this person because of all the, you know, terrible things he's done and because he's this perpetual addict and stuff. So I think a lot of times we really don't know, like, you know, whether we can help or not, but whether we can or not, looking at them that way, you know, has an effect, right?
Mm-hmm. That almost seems like number 4.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it is like number 4 too.
I struggle with this so much, and I find it really interesting that sloka number 4 there. Pat saw that the person was suffering, so you were wondering if you have a duty to help them stop their suffering. When I see that number 4, I focus on their ill-naturedness and their misdeeds, and what comes up for me is that those people are taking advantage of me. And so I have to go back to number 3 and examine my
mm-hmm.
my mind stream. And why, you know, like I'm thinking in a situation where you've had a service in your home and you feel like they just were so ill-natured and they wanted to charge you too much. And,
mm-hmm.
and I have a difficult time cherishing them.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anyone bring up the feeling of being taken advantage of. And how do you confront that?
Mm-hmm.
How can you cherish somebody who's charging you too much and you're like, you know, really? So that's an example.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do think it's urgent that I examine my feelings. It's funny, in Western word,
mm-hmm.
we often say, well, I'll be the better man. That means, okay, I'll give up. You can have the money anyway. I'm the better person. And it's actually the opposite of what's in this Tibetan.
That's the low insight state that we were talking about yesterday. You know, when you know, because then you're saying, you know, you're doing that thing where, you know, I'm the good person, you're the faulty person, and I'm going to take this action that's going to help you. And that's the sort of the low insight dynamic that's not to be striven for. You know, I think this thing about you know, this idea that has come up so many times during the retreat about, even though when we, you know, when we do things that are intended to help others, we end up being more assured of the benefit. I think that's the same thing here. You know, with say challenging political figures or, you know, evil terrorists or something like that, they do, as you were saying, force you to think and examine. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
why is that wrong? You know, why would someone act that way? And you know, and reflect on your own sort of place
mm-hmm.
in the world. And I think, you know, one thing that people comment about the internet and news nowadays is your computer gradually learns and just feeds into your own belief system
mm-hmm.
more and more. Everything you read is, you know, supports your own comfort. And so it is very helpful. And these people do teach us from afar.
Yeah.
So that if, you know, say there's you know, a terrorist who's, you know, kidnapping or killing or something like that. It's
mm-hmm.
not really directly affecting me because it's thousands
mm-hmm.
of miles and oceans away and all that. But it is affecting me, you know, in terms of challenging my peace of mind and, you know, at least making me think about
mm-hmm.
these questions. So I do learn from that. So that's a good example of where mm-hmm. I can't really help the benefit, or I can't help the victims of that terror maybe directly. Don't even know who they are, you know, can't reach the conflict zone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I can maybe learn something, maybe be a better person, recognize in that stark example, that stark example maybe is recapitulated in something I see
yes.
in my life, where there's a tiny act of, you know, interpersonal violence or sexism or racism or, you know, some negativity. And maybe I can practice that little step.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I do benefit from the teachers, even if I don't, even if I'm not close, you know, not physically close or entangled with them.
Mm-hmm.
On a, in a little bit.
Good point.
Yes, there. Something.
In much of American higher education, there's a. In the founding principles of many universities and so on, there's a strong notion about freedom of expression and creating space even for those views that you find most repugnant. But there's and at the same time, there's a distinction between giving expression to beliefs that you find repugnant, and but also drawing the line on certain actions. And so, that it, you know, you might argue for a particular position, but then actually engaging in that action gets treated in a different way. Is there a similar notion in Buddhism about one's response? Maybe I have to be specific. You know, at the schools where I've worked, we have tolerated anarchists. You know, we want that belief system to be given expression. However, if you decide you're going to then burn down one of the buildings on campus, we draw the line and say, can't do that. And I wonder if there's a similar tension or how Buddhism deals with that tension between your the value of having these expressions and then but yet being accountable in a certain way for engaging in the action. Is there a similar notion? Do you understand my question?
Yes.
Samlin nalang ngay bach che ba taa langlin thong ngay bach ngay paala kheba yoyos taa kheba ra shi luo shi warwa taa samlin nalang ngay bach ya samlin khonaya kala khanzang ngay koi di ngay bach ya shi dhugal naa dhig raya sinay ngay shi taa koi samlin nalang yoyoba naa shi baka langlin taa dhu dhugal taa ngay shi taa taa mi shi naa nyoy chun chi raya su kwa ngay bach chi raya su khonan lay ngay bach chi raya saya chi dindi shi raya taa dindi kheba di kheba khanda shi yao khaya shi taa
anakis
ndi wa taa pe chokwaan kala wa taa I mean, from the Buddhist perspective, you know, the that kind of thought or the anarchy, you know, the anarchical thought itself is negative thought in a sense from the Buddhist perspective, you know. So that negative thought will have its own consequences, and then if it is actualized through physical damage, of course, then it is immediately destructive. So in Buddhism, in really strictly from the Buddhist perspective, we will not tolerate even that thought itself, because that thought has the seed of destruction in its own. I mean, in its very nature, it's a negative thought, and therefore it's a thought that will lead to lower realms of existence, you know, as a consequence of that thought. Even if it is not expressed. But if it's expressed, of course, then the damage is immediate, you know.
And yet this also talks about cherishing these expressions that are ill-natured because of the opportunity it provides to you for a certain way of being
right.
So that's good. It calls into question this kind of Western liberal, you know, speech is okay, action is not okay. Well, actually, threatening to kill a politician or threatening violence against a partner, that's not okay. We actually do something about that. So, you know, I think it shows you the middle path. You can't say, you know, thought is fine, speech is fine, action is limited. You know, it's not that absolute.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you some speech, some context.
All right. It's a pretty. You have to go pretty far to move in moving from a general threat to a very specific threat in our society. You know, there's a fair amount of tolerance for pretty outrageous things being said, and it's one of the things I kind of appreciate is that thoughts have consequences.
It's one thing to regulate the thought of your own mind, and another thing to regulate thought in the society.
Because
or regulate speech in society. You can regulate what comes up in your own mind, but to regulate it in society is a completely different thing.
So thank you, everybody. This helped me. What I'm thinking now that I can share is that this wannabe anarchist has at one point reserved the human birth. I mean, that's a precious gift. So I can share is that. I can share is that person's passion. That person has passion to improve things. I do not have to cherish the action, but it says cherish them, so I can cherish them. So I will settle there.
You mean you separate the person and the behavior?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I
so
was,
to cherish the person but not cherishing the behavior.
Yeah, I
yeah.
cherish
yeah.
that that person is a human.
Yeah, because see, that person is completely under the influence of kalesha and karma, you know.
Yes, I leave that
yeah.
and I
he's, he has no power in himself. about his actions, you know, in a sense, because of karma and kalesha,
mm-hmm.
you know. Because these are the real force, you know, that enables, that triggers all our negative action, because we have kalesha and karma, you know.
Yeah, the karma will catch up with that
yes.
person.
So this is always,
yeah.
they always just go together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no karma if there's no kalesha.
Mm-hmm.
So kaleshas are the main force that propels, that drives all our actions, you know.
Thank you.
So, first of all, this teaching is based on Bodhisattva Mayana practice. So we have to know this means that we are at a different level comparing to Theravada practice, okay? So, whereas Theravada practice, as I mentioned yesterday, primary focus self-liberation, self-awareness. In that practice, then level is very different. So you don't have to cherish everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That means whenever someone is harmful, then you actually restrain ourselves from them. That's where there's no violation of ethical issues if you are practicing Theravada practice. When someone is harmful and you actually distance yourself. And that is okay at that moment. But when it comes to Mayana, Bodhisattva practice, the goal is to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. So with that as a principle, if there's some individual or oneself, let's say other individual, who is harmful, now that person is included in your all living beings. So therefore, you cannot neglect that person and avoid. That would be violation of Bodhisattva's vow, ethics. So you cannot like expel anarchists from yourself, or like Zach mentioned, addicted individual. You cannot neglect the person. So you hear the cherishing. So you do need to cherish. That means we usually actually see, let's say anarchists, we see only the negative side of that person. And if you are practicing Theravada, that is combating afflicted emotions, then you have this combat attitude and you defeat the afflicted emotions. You defeat the enemies. Whereas now, Bodhisattva practice, basically underlying what we are learning today, is called transforming adverse condition into conducive factors. Okay? So if we are not able to transform adverse condition into, then we will really take long time even to receive a personal well-being and happiness and peace. So So what it means is that situation happens and our mind selects only what you like and avoid what you don't like. But now Bodhisattva teaching saying that you actually become aware all sides, like holistic view. Okay, so without cherishing and valuing how every conditions, whether it is conducive, adverse condition, both have the potential to bring transformation. So that's the idea that you maintain, that even someone exhibits some kind of adverse condition and you are able to see the all aspects of that. So you're using your both eyes, okay? Unlike me, I may not see it all, but it's like you open your both eyes and see the both sides of that individual, okay? So if you see all parts, like say anarchist, but anarchist might have other potentials, who knows? And like we talked yesterday, actually I encountered someone who was anarchist a year ago and actually now renounced that. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So cherishing, if you have some object with your position, how you would cherish that? Mm-hmm. Can you share how do you cherish that? What do? If you have a car that you like very much, or if you have maybe gears, I don't know. How do you cherish that?
Take care of it.
Take care, right?
Acceptance.
And when, let's say that actually, that object actually receives some kind of damage, what do? With that? Do you throw right away?
Mm-hmm.
Your cherishing object.
Mm-hmm.
You still keep it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You still keep it and find ways how to fix it,
mm-hmm.
maintain, and call specialists.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you do. So you do the same. That's what it means by cherishing. Cherishing meaning you see some potentials, you see values,
mm-hmm.
you see some benefit, even it is bothering you. Okay. Yes.
I mean, this almost seems like a call to embrace things that you initially see as repugnant.
Yeah.
To go there instead of that feeling of withdrawal
right.
or avoidance.
Right, right.
It's kind of a, feels to me like the energy around this is go there.
Yes.
That's where the opportunity is.
Yes, yes. That is, you treat like, well, if I make it step system of practice, and Kim, what did you share? You, this house cleaning or what? You felt?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say it just came over me like,
and then
that I would there's no point in me
right.
arguing about the money, because the woman who gave me the quote and the guy who came out and then added $400 to it, they're both just middle class people too, like me,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So what emotion you got?
I suddenly feel that's not. That I cherish them for being just fellow citizens in the world doing their job. I cherish them,
okay.
and I don't want to fight with them. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. So let's say first you got really upset.
I was.
And so your first practice is not cherishing.
Yes.
Okay. Your first person is, I really felt upset at the moment.
Cheated.
let's practice that first, okay? And then maybe you take deep breath, or you look at outside, and then you come back and try whether you can think about these for a few seconds. And then after that, you can see whether you can express and read this. So the Bodhisattva practice is a very, very challenging. Because if you neglect, if you expel someone, that means now your enlightenment time is postponing. Because whatever situation we face, although it may look like, feel like adverse condition, but it also presents very, very conducive factors. So that means it all depends how we perceive them and what type of attitude we have. And these are teachings on how to have open, holistic attitudes towards even facing challenging situations.
That's just what Art said. Art said, don't separate from the conflict, just go there and solve it by cherishing. And
yes.
I can see I'm going around and around working to understand and this what we're talking about right now, and I see certain things. I'm trying to sense and understand certain parts that are more about me as an individual and doing this work as an individual, but I also am thinking about it in a larger way of being a human being amongst all human beings and knowing self and others. And I think this is a good opportunity for me to ask a question that is the bigger one, not the littler one, of my own confrontations with my own destructive emotions and whether to explore them and take them on or try and avert them because I have aversion to them and I'm afraid of them and I'm thinking it's better for me and others if I don't go there. So there's that, and then there's this part about someone like Hitler or Stalin, where how do I cherish them? And I sometimes have thought, well, right now I'm thinking their behavior versus them, okay, so no, I will never cherish their behavior. Mm-hmm. I can think about Hitler as a person and wonder about his mother and his father and his how he was born and, you know, would that happen to me if I was him? But it's really large to think about that. And
shall I let you soon?
Yeah, these are really very, very, very complicated situations we are talking about. Because Hitler, as a single human being, I mean, from the Buddhist perspective, he has committed enormous negative action against humanity. So we just even more feel more, what we call, compassion, you know? Because he has to bear the consequences of those enormous negative actions that he has committed against humanity. You know? So a bodhisattva will feel even more compassionate to him, you know, rather than rejecting him. You see, from the ordinary human perspective, of course, we will reject. We will say, yeah, he is the number one demon, what do you call it, demon or monster or whatever, you know, and then just absolutely reject him, you know. But from the Buddhist perspective, he's the first one to have our most intense compassion, you know, because he has committed enormous negative action, you know.
Like the bully, now we think of the bully, we recognize
exactly.
Is the one that needs
so,
the love
yeah,
most.
Yeah, so we don't condone his, what do you call, his action, but we just completely feel compassionate to him, you know. Because he is the one who will suffer enormously in future times for his consequences, for the consequences of his negative actions, you know.
Everyone, so many people are suffering right
yes,
now.
Yes, exactly.
So how do I?
Yes.
I can cherish the person.
Right.
I don't know how I also then.
So then now
can
as
be
a,
in the world with
yeah,
what
as
that
a,
person's doing.
Yeah. So as a person, as a now practitioner, what I'll do is as a practitioner myself, you have people like him, like you say, Hitler, Stalin, even Mao Zedong and many other world leaders. But who made them leader in the first place, you know? It's not one person. There are hundreds who cherished him. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of people who just, you know, liked his policy or liked his, you know, or way of thinking and acting, you know. So they all are responsible. It's not one single nation or one single individual person. It is the party and then millions of people in the party, and they all just, you know, either is for him or against him, you know. So it's such a complicated situation, you know. So everybody has part, you know, either whether it's positive contribution or negative contribution. Maybe the whole world has a contribution, you know, towards Hitler's rise, or Stalin's rise, or Mao Zedong's rise. So these are very difficult, I mean, and almost a complex situation. But as a practitioner, you know, what I can do best is I'll try to, you know, have as much compassion as possible towards him, but never condone his action, you know. So we'll now say, what, of course we know that ultimately, of course, we have to blame, you know, on the clinging, you know, ego clinging or grasping, you know, grasping to the self. That is the root, at the root of all these negative, you know, negative actions, you know.
So it teaches us as people?
Yeah. So then as a people, we try to minimize, we try to go to the root of the problem and then at least get rid of it, because otherwise this problem will remain forever, you know, if we don't take action within ourselves first, you know. Now as a practitioner, if I am a practitioner, then I will try to now minimize or try to, if possible, uproot, you know, all of my negative emotions, but at least try to practice and minimize them as much as I can. Because by being that, you know, I'm making sure at least there's one person less, you know, what do you call, less afflicted, less negative, less criminal or whatever, you know, on this planet, you know. So then if I try to reach others through this practice and make it more and more and more and expand it, of course, then we have the chances, like His Holiness Dalai Lama always say, you know, first the love and compassion begins with the individual, you know. Then you just spread to the family, then to the community, then to the nation, then to the world at large. Yeah, so that is the kind of, you know, procedure or practice that we have to do, you know. Otherwise, I cannot help. Even Buddha could not help, you know. See, that's what I said before, you know. There are hundreds of thousands of Buddhas in the world, maybe even now, you know. We don't know, but they cannot help directly, you know, because they have to help only through teaching and make each individual understand what he is all about. So each individual, the light has to come from higher teachings, But each individual must work for liberation, for liberation from all these negative, emotions. That is what I feel, and that's my little understanding, of course.
We'll come back. Okay. So let's integrate all of these into practice.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that we have very, very, very important topics that we ask and that we interact. So let's say now, let's put all of them into practice. And we focus on what we are capable of. We do what we are capable of to manage and to handle all the challenging topics and the people that we talk. So let's say this is what we are going through, and let's first put them into practice. And so first, how about we take 3 deep breathing, inhale, hold, and release 3 times. And so we'll start now. Inhale, hold, and exhale. So pay attention on our breathing. Breathe in, hold, and release. Breathe in, hold, and release. And now please take out this poor immeasurable. And so we could at least send our thoughts and aspirations for all living beings, including all the people that we talk and people we haven't talked. Okay? So we'll recite "May all beings" for 3 times. May all beings attain happiness and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings never be separated from joy that is free of misery. May all beings be free from bias and attachment and aversion. May all beings attain happiness and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings be separated from joy that is free of misery. May all beings in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion. May all beings attain happiness and its causes.
May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings never be separated from joy and misery. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias and attachment.
So please recite compassion session 3 times all together. May all beings be free
from suffering and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes.
So this time you're reciting the same, but there's some reflection with that. So if you say free from suffering, there's some reflection behind that. And causes of suffering, there's a reflection. So how about we say 3 times again? May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all beings be free from suffering and its causes. And and now we'll recite equanimity 3 times.
May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion.
This time we still recite the equanimity, but referring to ourself. So may I.
May I abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion. May I abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion. May I abide in equanimity, free from bias of attachment and aversion.
That's how you integrate into practice. You really focus on what you are capable to do now, and then rest will come by itself. So please take break for 10 minutes and then we'll continue the remaining. Okay? So
there's coffee and tea.
Come back at 10?
Yeah, back at, yes, please. Come back at 10.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, yeah.